listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Becky and Susan from Orlando, Florida. This episode features an interview with live sound engineer Carolyn Slothauer from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can find us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, soundgirls.org, and the website soundgirls.org.
So how was your weekend last weekend?
My weekends have been weird.
Or your week.
Yeah.
It's been a week.
I have been either working at the church or not. So most of the time I work there, but this weekend I didn't. Because it was my future stepchild's fifth birthday.
It's funny how you say that.
Yeah.
Y'all, Sue's made the coolest cake. She was sending me pictures of it. It took you like 3 days to make this cake.
Yeah.
And decorate. Is it an ice cream cake?
Mm-mm. It's a milk bar cake. So milk bar they have a bunch of flagship stores, but it originated in New York with Momofuku. I don't know if you've ever heard of that restaurant.
Uh-huh.
But they specialize in like treats from your childhood. And the person who originated it, her name is Christina Tosi, and her favorite things are like Dairy Queen. Like she makes these like total like stoner foods, but they're really good.
It's like Master Chef. She's like the chick from Master Chef, right?
Yeah, yeah. And she was on Master Chef.
Love that show.
She's so cool. And she's I have four of their cookbooks, of Momofuku and then the milk bar. So this recipe was from the milk bar cookbook, and it's the way that they do their cakes is always in like multiple layers. So there's like cake layer and then frosting, like an inch of frosting, and then something crunchy, and then there's also a soak. So that's, and then you repeat that each time you layer it. So it goes like, I don't know, like 10 inches high, 8 or 10 inches high, this cake.
You'll need to go on Susan's Instagram and look at her amazing cake job.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I could never pull that off. I don't bake. I burn. I'm really good with like stovetop cooking and the grill. I can grill like a beast. But baking is not my specialty at all.
Yeah, this one was kind of forgiving. I made like the cake one day. I baked just the cake one day and then made the cookie crumbs another day and then the frosting a different day so that I could assemble it all, because you have to assemble it and then freeze it so it can get, like, nice and solid and not fall over.
That's way, way, way too much detail for me.
It was so good, though. Like,
it looked amazing. I was a little jealous.
I had some for breakfast.
That's indeed. Today I had cold pizza for breakfast. This COVID is not helping me. I'm just saying. I was out of town all week last week. I did my first gig in 4.5 months.
Oh, my God.
It was a corporate gig in Michigan. I drove a box truck full of gear back and forth. That was horrific because nothing is open except gas stations. If you want to eat somewhere.
Gas station food.
Yeah, because drive-thrus are open, but you can't go through a drive-thru in your box truck.
Oh.
So, yeah. So any sort of semblance of almost wise decisions, and I can't really eat a salad while I'm driving a box truck either. So if it's a gas station salad, that didn't work well. So, yeah, I've been off for about a week and a half just eating horribly.
Yep.
Horribly. And I was just getting back in the swing of things, you know, doing the protein shakes and trying to eat healthier and like going for walks and things like that. So now I got to get back on that whole thing. And it was weird to do a gig. I'm not going to lie. It's a whole new weird world. You know, I had my equipment. We had a band that came. They brought all of their own equipment.
Okay.
And tied into our system. And then I mixed, you know, like a split. So I mixed from that so that they had their own microphones and their own gear that they touched, including monitors. They brought their own monitors. So it was just my cable lines and my console and speakers that they didn't touch, and I didn't touch their stuff. So that was kind of weird too.
Yeah.
Instead of me setting up the mics for everybody and all that, I kind of had to depend on what they had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of 58s, 57 situation. But, you know, decent enough that we can make it work. We were allowed no more than 50 people. you know, it was a sit down dinner thing. The wait staff all wore masks and all that. So, but then you have to take them off to eat. So that was kind of like up to whoever came, if they were okay with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just weird, dude. It was really weird. And it turned out great. You know, I had a great group of people that came and helped set up and tear down. Bunch of freelancers from the Michigan area, and I will give them a shout out, Encore AV, because they rocked. And I don't know if that's just how they train their people. Some of it I could tell was, and some of it was these guys are so excited to be working again that they will do anything, including folding drapes. So, that was a really, really fun moment where I was like, dude, take as long as you want. And we ended up hanging out. Everybody was just so grateful to be doing what we love to do that I don't think any of the normal crazy or bitchiness even surfaced once, you know?
That's great. So no one had like an attitude like, oh,
not at all.
They were just excited.
Yeah, totally excited to be working. And we sat down and had lunch together one day and just chatted, you know? So that was kind of cool. But then coming off that and coming back home has been weird, a little like, I don't know how to say it. It's kind of like the same feeling you get when you come back off tour where you're doing intense stuff all the time, or probably what I assume people in studios do too, where they're working with one band and the same people all the time. Mm-hmm. Kind of a little bit of what you went through. You're used to teaching in front of people, you know, and now you're doing it a whole different way. So I don't know. I don't know where I'm at mentally or emotionally with that yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, it all feels weird. We've in Orlando now, and I don't think this affects the rest of Florida, but they've had us start going back into having to wear masks in public. So that's not mandated for the whole state, but it is for here. And you'd be surprised the people who aren't doing it. They just don't do it. They don't care.
I find that weird. I traveled with my mask. I put it on anytime I left my truck, you know. Mm-hmm. One, I'm in a different area.
Yeah.
But two, there's other people to think about, you know. So I think there's a little bit of that where I'm like, you know, I may be asymptomatic, but that doesn't mean you are. So mm-hmm. I'm going to protect myself and you as best I can and do my job and try to comply with whatever rules and regulations there are. And I think that's a thing too, you know, owning a company. We thought through that a lot. We talked about it a lot, you know, ahead of time, and it has to be a personal choice. Mm-hmm. You know, for each person that's coming and, you know, like Michigan was only allowed 50 people to gather. So we had to factor the five of us that did the event in with that. Normally we'd have, you know, 10 or 12 of us, but we had to downsize. So I had to run lights and audio, you know, like our producer had to produce and run video, you know, and the other people that are checking people in, just instead of having four, they had two, and, you know, just all sorts of interesting things, you know. One of the things I did too, like normally I would have headset mics for every speaker, you know, we mm-hmm. just pivoted back. We went backwards. We went to just a podium mic at the podium.
Yeah.
And everybody that talked came up and used the one mic. So at the end of the day, all I had to clean were my cables and my one mic, you know, and it wasn't like, oh, this guy used that mic and now he's using that and this, you know. So I think it's per event for me and per, I don't know, I'm starting to get some stuff open up and some events that are happening, but we're talking through every single bit of that, which just hasn't happened before. So it's a whole new ballgame.
Exhausting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a tattoo yesterday.
I know my eyes just went really big because I'm jealous. I want a tattoo. I have a new one. I'm looking at doing a new one. Mm-hmm. What did you get, Suze? What's your tattoo?
It's a pile of kitties, and it was for all of the proceeds of the event went to the SPCA in Orlando to help support the kitties. So it was all for the kitties. They had like adoptable cats.
Loved that.
But it was definitely weird because it was an event, so there were a lot of people, not like 50 people, but you know, there was like a line of people who wanted to come in and meet the kitties and adopt and get a tattoo and all of that stuff. And so we all had to wear masks. We had to wear masks, and they would only let the people being tattooed into the building. And then for the kitty section, they had borrowed the next door. There was like a barber shop next door, and so they had a separate event, which, you know, they probably would have all done it in one spot.
Right.
So then they had borrowed the place next door for all the kiddies. And so they were only letting in, like, two people at a time for everything.
Okay.
And they did a great job, like, trying to organize it so that everyone, you know, followed the rules, so that everyone felt okay and all of that stuff. But, you know, wearing a mask and the tattoo guy wearing a mask while tattooing me, it was definitely weird.
Yeah.
It didn't upset me or anything.
Meanwhile, you're getting stuff burned in your leg.
Yeah.
But you can't. You have to wear a mask. I don't know how I feel about that.
I got a little dizzy. And I was like, I need a moment. And they brought me, like, a water. And I'm like, I don't think I'm going to faint, but I don't feel okay. And I don't normally it's get
interesting.
That way.
Yeah.
I was just like, I need a second. So they brought me water and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not going to pass out in front of these guys. Like, these tattoo guys.
I'm going to pass out while I'm getting my tattoo.
Especially something so dumb as, like, a pile of kitties. You know what I mean? Like,
I straight up love that you got a pile of kitties. And where is it? It's on your leg?
Yeah, it's on my thigh. I have a lot of real estate there, Becky.
That's funny.
I was just looking at my,
you know, as many kitties as you have, you should have it commemorated somewhere. That's what I think.
The tattoo artist, he had 6 cats at his house, so.
Oh, help me. I don't know how I feel about 6 cats, yo.
That's more than me.
I don't, even if I wasn't allergic to cats, I don't think I would have 6 of them.
They're
not because
up.
I don't like cats. Because I think cats are pretty cool, and yeah. I think they're kind of interesting because I like the fact that they just do what they want. They have their own personality.
Then you have
it's
6
more like
things in your house.
That's what it is. I don't need any more things. I got enough things.
And they do whatever they want, and so they're just walking around doing cat stuff.
So I kind of feel like I do whatever I want. I don't have a roommate. I live by myself. I do what I want. I don't want someone else in here trying to think they can do the same thing I'm doing because that's my territory. See, it's a territorial issue for me.
Yeah, the cats, they just do whatever they want. We haven't had any cat events today. No one's come over to bother the recording or the computer or anything. So,
Sometimes we have cat that'll walk through in the middle of the podcast.
Yep.
You'll hear cats in the background sometimes. We have that going on too. Today we recorded one that had a bird in the background, and I still have no idea whose bird that was.
I didn't hear a bird here, so I don't know.
Maybe I'm just hearing birds now. You never know. I mean, hey, I haven't drank anything today or done anything else weird, but birds, maybe. Maybe I hear birds. I don't know. Speaking of hearing and sounds and the things we do, I just want to give a quick shout out to some of the people that have been helping us try to improve our podcast as we go. Because as you all have noticed, being the amazing audio engineers that you all are out there, our podcast is not exactly audio perfect yet, but we're getting there and we're working on it and we're trying new software and new microphones and new programs like every day to get the right exact thing. And we want to thank you for being patient with us, but also want to give a shout out to Violet Davis, Samantha Potter from Church Sound Podcast, Larry Milburn from Roadie Free Radio Podcast. Mm-hmm. All 3 of those people have amazing podcasts and they sound great. And we have talked to them and we're using some of their techniques now. So that's cool. What else? Who else we need to shout out to? Oh, actually, Phyla made our music bed. Did we
she
talk
did.
About that?
No.
Yeah. So thank you for that. We're looking for other people to submit music beds if they'd like to.
Yes, please.
And send them to soundgirlspod@gmail.com. Yay, music beds. Yeah, send some of that, stingers, whatever. We'll listen to them and choose some good ones. And if we choose, you want to make this into a contest?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Send it in. Let's do a contest. And if you are the winner, you will be our new music bed for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's an awesome idea. Look at that. Look at us being cool.
Fantastic.
What else? I think Carrie Kies and Danny are awesome at the social medias and throwing everything out there for us and putting up, you know, flyers and everything for the podcast every week. Yay. Thank you all. Those people work way, way hard to make sure we all have information all the time as well. And we're all working together to get resources out for protests and rallies and all these other things that are going on in our world also, please get on the website, look at the resources, see how you can jump in and help out. There's more coming up every day. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we appreciate our listeners.
Yay.
Today's spotlight guest interview is Carolyn Slothauer. Carolyn started her music journey growing up in New Jersey. As a child, she grew a passion for playing the flute. We're going to talk about that a little bit in the interview today. She plays a variety of concert bands, competitive marching band. She did all that. That kind of sparked her interest in audio, and she received a bachelor's degree in music technology and has been working in the industry ever since. She spends most of her time traveling the world with a variety of artists, including Miha, Check Check Check, and Your Smith. She recently found her niche in live sound. Carolyn, welcome to the Sound Girls Podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here. Well, one of the first questions that we have to dive into, obviously, is you are a live sound engineer, but you also play the flute. On the Sound Girls profile, I noticed that you said you play the flute from front of house along with the band that you're mixing. Is that true?
Yes, that's true.
Okay, now I got to find out more about how you do that.
Well, I mean, there's a balance, you know. Obviously, I can't play and mix at the same exact time. So I kind of have to think about that before I plan the flute parts. But we kind of go into that in the rehearsal stage, figuring out when I can, you know, stop touching the console and play a flute solo. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I can't stop playing to mix, so sometimes it can be a little bit nerve-wracking, but, you know.
Do you automate anything like with that, or you just kind of do it on the fly after you've obviously rehearsed it several times and whatnot?
I have not automated anything, but I think that might be something I need to do in the future.
I just can't imagine, as a front-of-house engineer, trying to play an instrument along with a band that I'm also listening to, but I'm in the front-of-house. Like, it blows my mind when I read it. I mean, that's a huge talent, for one. But also, I don't know that my mind could split those things up as much as your, or compartmentalize them, I guess, as much. Like, oh, now I'm the musician. Before I was the engineer, but now I'm both, you know?
She makes it sound so easy, too. Like, there's no way my brain can do that.
Right?
I think it helps that playing flute is so second nature to me. You know, like, I've played since I was like 7 years old. So I pick up the flute and I honestly don't need to think that much. You know, like, I'm still thinking and listening a lot as I play. So yeah, it's a lot of work. But once I have the flute part down, I feel like it's pretty, you know.
I've never heard of another engineer doing that, like, ever. I know one gentleman who plays bass from front of house once in a while to fill in parts. I feel like that would be a lot easier than playing a flute. I played a flute in high school. And so I'm so psyched that there's a flautist that plays and also is a front house engineer.
Yeah. Bring the flute back.
Between you and Lizzo, man. You guys are taking the world by storm. Watch out. Watch out, man. Flute's going to be the new instrument from now on. Cool. So, obviously we're all in the middle of this wonderful pandemic here that's going on. How is that working out with you as far as being home? You're not on the road. I know you do a lot of other things and work in venues and things as well, but, how have you been handling everything?
Well, it was kind of a shock. I was in the middle of a tour when everything started going down, and I think we were kind of just like in our own world, like me and our crew. And then all of a sudden we got an email saying we were being flown home the next day. And we were all just like, what? Like, what is going on?
And where were you?
You're in Philly. So I wasn't too far from home. But yeah, so I went home and kind of just been figuring out what other routes I want to pursue. Like I said, you know, I'd love to explore some sound design and composition and other routes. So I've been working on a lot of music, working on a lot of Ableton stuff, because Ableton playback engineering is something I've been looking into as well. So I've been, you know, really digging deep into that, watching lots of webinars and stuff. And I've been working with a small crew on an education program to educate children on event production, which I'm pretty excited
about.
Awesome. Yeah.
Is that something you guys are looking at doing class-wise or as an online portal or both?
So this has all been in the making before the pandemic happened. I do a little bit of education with a program called 25 Carrick, and their whole goal is to kind of do these education programs going into schools and adding into curriculum, because the company we have has all the audio gear, all the video gear. So we can go in and, like, as, you know, production experts, teach these kids for like a few weeks, and different kinds of modular programs. So what we're doing now is creating this like 3-month program that will be like an after school program for kids who sign up.
Oh, so, sweet.
We're trying to figure out if maybe this needs to be transitioned into something that's through video, or if we'll have the opportunity to start it like next year.
So that sounds really cool.
Yeah, go ahead, Susan. Sorry, I was cutting you off there.
Yeah, we have a bit of a delay from the internet, but it's cool. that sounds really cool. How did you get started with that?
So they're like a nonprofit branch of a production company that I work for. That I've worked for like 4 years now.
Awesome. I like that. Is there is that up for people to go look at right now, like a website or anything, so they can find out more information, or is that something you're still just in the process of building?
25 Carrick Ave does have a website. I believe it's just 25 Carrick, CARRICK.com, or it might have the Ave in the web address. I'm not sure. But yeah, that program is all just kind of in the works right now.
Okay, cool. Well, listeners, go check that out. 25 Carrick Ave, is that what you said? Sorry.
Yeah, and they did a great live stream when this whole thing went down and made a lot of money for Pittsburgh artists, actually, which was really, really cool.
Ah, very cool. So check it out if you're local in Pittsburgh or just nationwide. See if something that might be something you guys might be interested in learning or passing on to the next generation of people to learn. Thanks for doing that. I appreciate anybody who can give back to the next generation of people, since a lot of us are standing on the shoulders of some very awesome women that have tried to get us more recognized in the industry. Let's talk about that a little bit. How did you break into the live events industry or audio at all?
Well, like my bio mentioned, I have always just played flute and performed and loved that. And that kind of like introduced me to the ideas of audio. And I had a wireless microphone and marching band from like my flute solos and stuff. And I was always so curious how all that worked. And I knew that I wanted to go into the music industry. So when I went to college, I looked for a program that was specifically performance, but also the tech side, which ended up being this college called California University of Pennsylvania, which is outside of Pittsburgh. But I moved out here for college, and I wasn't really sure what branch of the music industry I wanted to go into. So I played a lot of flute in college and did a lot of studio recording, and then got an internship when I was maybe 20 with a company that had a recording studio and a live sound company. So I kind of just realized doing that I loved being in the action of it all, and, you know, all the different challenges that you have in live sound that you don't have in a studio. You know, like I get a little bit antsy and bored sitting in the same room all the time.
Same.
And then from there, I just started picking up little gigs here and there once I graduated, and kind of transitioned into working full time, just freelancing all over the city.
Cool. One of the things that you had said on your Sound Girls profile, you were talking a little bit about social skills and communication, and the hard parts of that as a live sound engineer and how to break into that world. And you described yourself as it used to be a withdrawn antisocial child. So I'm curious, because I'm an outspoken person and have always been outgoing. Networking hasn't been too difficult, but even for an outgoing person, it's a little difficult sometimes. So I guess I was wondering, how did you go about overcoming that antisocial part of yourself, for a lot of young engineers out there? Like how can you describe like how you did it and how you broke into the industry?
I'd say just straight up facing my fears every day. You know, like sometimes I would be just anxious to exist, you know, and I'll go to work and I just knew that like that was what I wanted to do, and I was willing to push myself in ways that made me uncomfortable and like really push me out of my comfort zone. which, you know, when I was younger, tended to be being in like social situations. And, you know, just going out and doing it every night and making that conversation and realizing that, you know, it was pretty easy and I'm not too terrible at it. And, you know, a lot of internal work, you know, just, you know, thinking every day that, you know, it's not a big deal, you know, and working towards what you want to do. That's, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Sure. Is there something that you could draw from yourself that helped you face those fears, or is it just the gumption to go after your passion?
I think confidence is really crucial, you know, and a little bit fake it till you make it, you know, pretend you're confident. And the more you pretend and put out that confidence into the world, even if it's fake, it starts to become real. And, you know, the more you do it, the more confidence you'll get inevitably. So
that's awesome. I think that would really encourage a lot of younger girls that are scared and haven't done it yet, or may struggle with anxiety issues as well. Just hearing your story and how you faced your fears and went after it. So thank you for doing that. I think that's a great example of someone we can all follow, you know, especially to get in the industry and network and do all that. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
what other things can you give us kind of like when you're on the road, things that you like to do while you're out there, or what you like about being on the road specifically?
Well, I mean, the thing I love about being on the road is just things being different every day. Like I said, I get a little antsy and bored just doing the same thing. So being in a different city with different people, you know, different room, I love that. So, I mean, that's just every day is just new and exciting for me, you know. And when I come home and work local gigs, you know, it's always nice to be home. But I still get antsy, you know, I want to be on the road. And as for things that I like to do on the road, my usual go-to is like, if I have an off day, I think I put this in the article too. Like I love to find crystal shops. I love crystals. That's one thing that I'm also focusing while I'm home is selling my crystals. I wrap crystals and sell them as jewelry.
So very cool.
Make that more of a business now that I'm home and can actually work on it.
So it's like a hobby for you, something you just enjoy.
Yeah, I love it. And I love to find vegan restaurants too, because I'm a vegetarian, but vegan restaurants have like the best food ever. So,
yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because I'm mostly vegetarian here in Orlando and we have a lot of options. But traveling, when I used to be going across the country years ago, it was such a struggle. Have you noticed that it's gotten better for you, or, do you have any issues trying to find like vegan vegetarian stuff while you're on tour?
I'd say that it's really not too hard to find vegetarian food. I think that if I was full on vegan, it would be more difficult. Like, you know, not so much in bigger cities, but you know, in the smaller places that you hit might be a little bit more challenging, especially if you're like working festivals and it's all catered and they don't necessarily have all the vegan options. But that's
really— unless you're in California, I think it might be hard.
Yeah, right. I'll be in that way. But yeah, I've like pretty much always been vegetarian. So it's kind of just like natural to me. You know, sometimes I have to just get a salad when I don't want one. Not a big deal.
What's your favorite vegetarian food? What's your go-to?
Oh man.
All of them.
I mean, that counts as vegetarian.
Say that again. Sorry.
Pizza? Can I say pizza?
You can say pizza. Absolutely.
Pizza is totally vegetarian.
Pizza should be allowed everywhere all the time, no matter what kind of food you eat. Yeah.
As long as it's not the only catering offering, then we're cool.
Right, right.
I was really surprised this past summer. I got to go on a vacation with a friend of mine who works for Ross Video, and she does most of her work traveling. But I told her, I'm like, hey, look, I am mostly vegetarian now, so we're going to Eastern Europe. I need you to be cool about this. And she was like, great. But I was shocked at the options that I had. Like they took us to this, our tour guide took us to this like famous gelato restaurant that like has the best gelato in Europe or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll sit this one out. They freaking had vegan gelato there.
I was shocked and I was so happy. Like, I don't think I've ever been that happy over ice cream before in my entire life. But it was so cool. There's so much more now than there used to be. You know what I mean? You could probably be vegetarian or vegan and not even notice a lot of these places now.
Yeah, there was a very wholesome moment in my brother's life. He is allergic to dairy. So literally, like, his whole life has never had ice cream or, you know, any kind of dairy. So, and, you know, I am personally an ice cream lover.
And recently, I mean, come on, who is it really? I honestly don't know anyone who doesn't like ice cream.
Right. But yeah, like a year ago, it was like his first time. He was always kind of like against the vegan ice cream or whatever. I don't know for what reason, but he tried it like a year ago and sent me this picture of him eating an ice cream cone. I've never seen that look on his face before. Like he always has vegan ice cream in his fridge now. So his life is forever changed.
I love that.
That's awesome.
Well, while we're on the subject of food, I mean, why not? What's your go-to beverage? Do you have one?
Oat milk latte is, you know,
prime. Nice. That one I haven't heard yet. Toast. Good job. Nice. what's your favorite PA? What's the favorite PA to mix on?
B&B. No question.
Mine too.
Yes.
Dude, there's something about that sound. I just love it. Yeah. Yeah. So that's funny that you're the first one who's had the same one as me. So I like that. Cool. Favorite venue you've ever mixed in?
I have to say Terragram Ballroom in LA.
I have been there. Nice place. Yeah.
Yeah. Love that venue.
Load in was a little rough, but the rest of it was great when I was there.
From the rough load in I've had. It's the sound of the room, I think.
Tell me about your roughest load in.
Roughest load in. Oh, there are some rough ones. There was a venue, I think it was in Seattle, that was really rough. And I've been there a few times. It was at Barboza in Seattle, the downstairs at Numos. And I think just one of the times there was something going on that we had to go like all the way around. And then something was going on with my crew that there were only like two of us. And it was like downstairs and around the, I don't know. I just remember being very stressed out at that moment. But, you know, of course there are a few that are good competitors.
Yeah. So what's your favorite? Did I ask you your favorite venue mixed in? Yeah, I did. Tigram. And then, so that was your worst load in. Is there a time where you can think like, man, that is my favorite mix, best place, most awesome day that I've had on tour yet?
I mean, there've been quite a few. But I think there was one show I mixed with Chick 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 in New York. It was Music Hall of Williamsburg. And specifically, I just loved that show. I mean, it's a really nice room, but they also have like all analog. They have the Midas H3K. And the LD was just like on point that night. It was nice. I think it was a sold out show. So it was really good energy. There's always really good energy at their shows. And he like killed it with the spotlight for my flute solos. And it was just like a really, really good night.
That's so cool. Do people freak out like when they put the spotlight on you and you're playing flute? Like, do they know that's going to happen? Is that like a known thing with the fans? Or is that kind of a surprise in the middle of the show?
No, that was a surprise. And the vocalist, Nick, would call me out sometimes. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a mixture of like some people like don't. Like are just so shocked. Also, there is a good part of you know the population that isn't really sure what a flute is. So like you know, some people are just kind of confused by it, but then some people are like, "What's happening right now?" You know. So there's a balance.
I would lose it. That is one of the coolest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, totally. So I know we keep circling back to that, but you have such a unique story and such a unique thing. I don't know anybody else who does what you do at Front House. So that was one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you. I was like, this is so flipping cool. And just, yeah, I'm impressed by you. And I think we all should be.
So much.
What is some advice that you might have for other people trying to get into the industry? And obviously right now it's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, there's no work anywhere. What's going on? I'm losing my mind. Maybe I just started networking and I can't get a hold of anybody, or everybody's saying just hang in there. Like, do you have any advice you'd like to share?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my advice to give now in this situation is the same as it would be without it. And it's just to be quick to learn and adapt. I mean, you can see just how the community has responded to the situation, that everyone's been so quick to switch over to live streaming and, you know, continue to do their work in whatever way possible. And I feel like that's a really important attitude to have in general in this industry. You know, you really need to be flexible, and there's so many unexpected challenges in one night in live sound. But I mean, in general, you really have to be open to change and to learn new technology on the fly, you know, and we're all learning this live streaming thing now. And
right,
there'll be something new very soon, I'm sure. But, you know, it will come back, and we will get back into doing live sound. And I'll have the same advice to, you know, be open to learning a lot, and make sure, you know, with all this downtime, that you take advantage of all these awesome webinars and all these podcasts and, you know, everything you can listen to make sure you're where you want to be when you have the opportunity to show it.
That's great advice. Thank you so much for sharing.
Sure.
I think Susan's on a little bit of a delay here.
Yeah, I am. Thank you so much for talking with us, Carolyn.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We have some exciting news to talk to you about today. Leslie Ann Jones is doing a scholarship in honor of Ethel Gabriel. It is a scholarship for $250 for anyone who is interested in education in the music industry. Applications are now open. We also have Ethel Gabriel scholarship going on. Two of those for $500, and also four $250 scholarships from the Sound Girls for education, further education in sound, and all that. So look on the website, soundgirls.org, for more details on all three of these different scholarships and what the requirements are for all of that. Your deadline is July 30th at midnight. So make sure you're looking at all the details. Get those scholarships in right now, because now's your time. Scholarship season is open. You can sign up for them, do your, you know, 3-4 question essay, whatever it is, 400, 600 word essays. Get all of those in, because you don't want to miss this opportunity. Deadline July 30th for all the scholarships. Soundgirls.org is where you find that information. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you all for listening to the Sound Girls podcast. Until next time, sound humans, have a good week.